What's up, peeps? My name's James McPherson with Risk Fluent, bringing you another episode of Rebranding Safety. This is episode 4, Health and Safety Gone Mad. Health and safety professionals, you are the problem. You're thinking, well, hang on a minute, we were supposed to be talking about risk assessments this week. Yes, we were. I'll hold my hands up. Something happened this weekend, which we're going to talk about, that kind of made me change the schedule around. So risk assessments is still coming, but I think it's better suited next weekend. This week, we're talking health and safety gone mad. Let's get into the podcast.
Health and safety is almost a victim of its own success.
Weird and oppressive regime of health and safety regulations.
A huge fire engulfs a tower block in London.
Children being forced to wear goggles to play conkers at school.
Worst oil field disaster, 164 dead.
Rebranding Safety, the modern health and safety podcast, crushing the stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Fluent and your host, James McPherson. So first couple of updates, the podcast now on Apple Podcasts. You might have seen if you liked us on Facebook. It's also, as of this morning, on CastBox. Never heard of that app, but check it out, guys. Let me know how it is. So the Facebook page, as I just mentioned, up and running. Come and like the page, www.facebook.com/riskfluent, RISKFLUENT, Risk Fluent. And you can find us on Twitter, at Risk Fluent, spelt the same. So I have decided we're going to add a bit of consistency to this podcast. So going forward, there'll now be a weekly podcast, will now be uploaded every Tuesday for a bit of consistency for you all. Consistency is always good. So you know it's coming on Tuesday, so there's something you want to talk about, let us know and we'll add it to the schedule or see if we can work it into what we've already got. So something that really annoys you, let me know. Some of our followers have commented on one of the posts we shared on a health and safety group on Facebook, and we're going to talk about that today. So it does work, guys, so let me know what annoys you about health and safety. So health and safety professionals, you are the problem. What do I mean by that? So those of you that know, there's a motivational speaker called Simon Sinek. He talks a couple of times about... Well, he says the same thing. He says sometimes you're the problem. So he talks about purple fever, black death of childbirth, it was called, in the 18th century. So this this fever killed 70% of women who gave childbirth. So 70% of women that gave birth to a child ended up dying during the Renaissance. So it was a time of research, a time of mass improvement, you know, a time of science. So it was shocking that we were getting stuff like this. So basically, and I'm gonna really, really cut this down to real short and sharp. So if you want to look at a much better delivery and a much better explanation, search Sometimes You're the Problem, Simon Sinek, and you'll get a nice video. So in short, the doctors that delivered the child in the morning, the research in the morning, there were complete autopsies, and then in the afternoon and evening they would deliver the babies. So Oliver Wendell Holmes approached these people and said, guys, you're the problem, you're not washing your hands. They didn't believe him, so 30 years later, we're still going on, but somebody said 30 years later, actually, maybe we should wash our hands, and boom, the problem was sorted. So what he talks about there, essentially, and he said, like I said, he delivers it a lot better than I do because it's much more practiced, but he's talking about taking accountability, taking responsibility. And once you take accountability and you take responsibility, you can then take credit. And I think that's something we're lacking in the safety industry. So how does it apply to safety? Well, when you apply control measures, think about the impact on the person who you're so trying to protect. Yeah, think about that person who's having to do these extra things or not do these things because of the control measures that you and your team might have implemented. Even better, involve these persons in the risk assessments. Talk to these persons. Ask them what they think. Yeah, we're going to talk about risk assessments next week, and that's a key part of it, is involvement. That's how we create a good health and safety culture. So think about it. Ask yourself, am I going over the top? Am I going over the top? Take yourself out of your health and safety job and just think, I'm Joe Bloggs. Am I going over the top? Because sometimes I think we do, and it's quite easy to do that because, you know, and I stand up for safety professionals, we do get, it's a hard job, you know, we see all the bad, and sometimes we're very aware of the fact that we're writing our name on that risk assessment. You know, we're the health and safety professionals, and we're quite conscious of the fact that, you know, the culture at the moment is, James is our health and safety professional, and he told us we could do it. You know, that's why you've got to involve people. You've got to make it a team decision. And that then protects you a little bit, and it allows you and enables you to take accountability. Okay? So let me tell you why we changed the schedule around a little bit. So something happened with the rugby this weekend. So I'm a bit of a rugby fan. Hopefully there's a couple of rugby fans out there as well that are absolutely baffled by this decision. I don't think I'm going to be able to provide you any context as to why, because I'm just as baffled as you. So anyway, David Flatman tweeted, which is what highlighted it up to me because I didn't watch the game. Don't normally get rolled on here, he said. Can't be bothered, but I know there are only flags, and I know when, quotes, health and safety is mentioned, we dare not question it. And I know this is my old beloved club, but this is just utterly rubbish form. Bath should know better. So Bath Rugby, this is response to Bath Rugby tweet. So he's retweeted Bath Rugby tweet, which says, "We're really sorry. The flags were tested against three safety criteria and failed all three, including fire. We have to take safety seriously, but realise it's disappointing. We're really looking forward to the game, and we know you'll bring the noise to the wreck today." So I looked in a bit further, and I'm trying to find out. So then Leinster supporters tweeted, "At Leinster Rugby supporters, we brought 1,500 flags over to today's game, and Bath Rugby are refusing to let us distribute them. They're saying they failed health and safety tests." So I looked into as much as I can around Bath Rugby's reasons, and all there is out there, all that's been published anyway, is they failed three safety tests, including fire. That's it. That's all it says. I've raffled my brain and tried to find out what I can really, really think of what these are, and we'll go through them in a bit. But before we do that, I just want to talk about the other story that came out of this weekend. So I posted a bit about our podcast on UK Health and Safety Facebook group and asked people what annoys them about safety. And James Jimbo Kirk, there's your first shout out on the podcast. Congratulations, you're the first shout out. Commented, "What annoys me as a lorry driver is the amount of places that won't allow drivers to wait in their cab while being unloaded. Even while locking the trailer brakes and holding the keys. Drive for hours to get somewhere and having to sit in the hard chair for hours on end instead of in the cab where there's food, drink and a bed for the driver to rest before setting off for another 4.5 hour drive. In my view, not allowing drivers the comfort and safety of their cab affects everyone as the drivers are then forced to drive tired. Can't park on site, can't park outside for various parking restrictions everywhere. So I'm being allowed to eat, refresh and then snooze for hours is by far the safest thing." So not being allowed to eat, refresh and snooze for hours is by far the safest thing. So we had then a conversation around that, and I don't know much about it. I worked in a warehouse for a little bit when I was younger, in between college and the phrase salvo locks remind me of something. So yep, I remember salvo locks ever so briefly. And in essence, from our conversation, it looks like a combination of salvo locks and a wheel lock could provide us with a solution where James and other lorry drivers could go sleep in the cab. I can see the risk. I can see it. I've read a case study of a person being, I think if I remember rightly, was nearly sliced in half because he was hanging out of the gap between the trailer and the wall, shouting the lorry driver, and the lorry went forward towards the building and crushed him. You know, I can understand, you know, the lorry moving whilst there are people working in it. It is quite a high risk. So I can get people, you know, erring on the side of caution. I really do understand that. But when there's a technology out there, and if you've got that many loading bays, it seems like a reasonable thing to kind of control that risk, to spend that money. I understand it'd be quite expensive, and you know, some businesses might not be able to do that, but it doesn't sound like it's the smaller places that are struggling with this. From what James is saying, it looks like it's pretty much everywhere. So he did comment and say there are a couple of sites that do let him stay in the cab, which is nice to hear, so he gets a bit of a break. I'll be really interested to see if there's any other lorry drivers out there, or even better, safety professionals working in that industry. It'd be amazing to hear your side of things, you know. If you do work in that industry and you've got any interesting comments, follow us on Twitter at RiskFluent, or find us on Facebook /RiskFluent, and leave us a comment or message us. Let us know. It'd be really interested. So Joanna Daniel, she also got involved in the conversation. Second shout out on the podcast. Congratulations, Joanna. You two win absolutely nothing. So she mentioned a couple of things. It seems like it may be a bit more of a procedural thing, so it's a bit easier to come across a blanket approach, which is quite common in the industry. You know, it's much easier to do that. I've seen that around hearing protection quite a lot, you know, where they specifically say don't use blanket approaches, and they go with it anyway. That's quite interesting. So yeah, that was a really interesting conversation. I didn't really come up with a solution out of it, but to me, they all just seem like they're really poor risk assessments, they're really over the top reactions. So we touched on blanket approach previously. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a story and my experience with blanket approaches. So I've worked in a factory where we had to use hearing protection in quite a lot of areas, and we had a blanket approach, and we also had a massive problem with people cutting the hearing plugs, ear protection plugs that you put in your ears, people cutting them so they just sit in their ear so it looks like they're wearing it, people not wearing them, people not wearing them properly. You know, it was a real, real bad culture, real negative culture. And in my opinion, that our blanket approach of of using hearing protection was one of the main reasons why, because from the minute we set in the door, we had to wear them, even if you were just walking through the far end, where actually the when we tested the sound, the decibel level, sorry, of that area, it was considerably low as opposed to when you're working on the machine. So actually there was evidence there to show that we didn't need this blanket approach. And when you look at the guidance around it, it specifically says, you know, avoid blanket approaches, you know, to be specific in these areas and target areas where you need them. So what does this do? This encourages people to not wear their hearing protection, which is fine when they're in the area where it's not a problem, but then what it does then is they just don't wear it ever, or they don't wear it correctly ever, and then they don't wear it where they actually need it. Whereas if we only make them wear it where they actually need it, yes, it's harder to control, yes, it's harder to police, but you encourage a positive attitude towards it by doing that. Especially if you've got the blanket approach in now and then you change it, it'll take you time to get to where you need to be, but you know what, that's a positive change. And you can say to your staff, it depends how you sell it, but you can say to your staff, you know, we're doing this to try and help it be easier for you so you don't have to wear them all the time. You know, if they wear them all the time, whatever, they wear them all the time. But you know what, if we're just targeting those areas and doing what we're supposed to do, we're being reasonably practicable, then we get a better culture. Yeah, so then what we're talking about is perspective. I'm going to give you a quote here from one of my favourite books, Accidents to Zero by Andrew Sharman. And I'm going to do a podcast on this book, because if you're a safety professional out there and you haven't read this yet, or you've got it on your bookcase and you haven't even looked at it or pictured it because you think you haven't got time, or you've been meaning to buy it, or you've never heard of it, get it, pick it up, read it. It will change the way you do your job. So he's put in a book, you see, Culture change is about perspective, encouraging people to consider their attitudes and actions from a different angle. So I look at that from these two examples that we're talking about professionals, about safety professionals. Let's consider our attitudes and our actions from a different angle. Let's consider it from that person that really wants to support their team by using a flag. Some people, they follow their team, it's like their child, it's really engrossed in their life, it's part of their life, it's part of their family, it's something that they've always done with their daughter, it's something they've always done with their father, their son, you know, these going to these games are massive for some people, so let's just think about that from that perspective. Most people are not going there to set a fire to the ground. Yeah, granted, accidents can happen, I get that. But let's think about perspective. So then we start thinking about other people that are receiving these controls and being told they can't use their flags, and how it is from their perspective. What's their attitude towards it? What might their actions be? Well, actually, by being more prescriptive, are we encouraging a negative attitude and therefore a negative action? I don't know. But I understand when we're talking about, you know, the public, you know, it's hard to control, it's hard to understand. But in essence, and granted, there's alcohol there as well, I get it. But, you know, let's just think about our perspective, let's take a step back on this. This message just keeps coming up and up and up and up over and over again as we go through this. But if we keep asking these same questions and keep considering all different perspectives, we might be in a better place. So two things there. One, think of everyone's perspective. Try and think of of so many different perspectives. Number two, by yourself, accidents to zero. It's about changing the culture in your business, and it's about managing health and safety. So if you're listening, Bath health and safety professionals, or Bath CEOs, or Bath rugby owners, or whoever you are, the senior management team, buy yourself that book and learn how to manage health and safety properly. Or tweet me and provide a bit of context to what you've actually done. Anyway, let's crack on. I'm saying health and safety professionals are the problem. Am I really saying they're the problem? No, I'm not. It's a bit of a blanket comment, ironically. But I do wonder sometimes, you know, some safety professionals are the problem, you know, and you know them. If you're good at safety, you'll try and avoid these people, and you will know that there are people that just enjoy going over the top. It's that kind of, you know, failed their police officer test kind of attitude. I wonder whether this thing with Bath Rugby was a little bit of a marketing ploy. I'm not sure. There have been comments made on Twitter to it, but I'm really not sure. You know, how come these can be used at Leinster's ground? Different laws? I really don't know. I can't see any reason why they couldn't be used, if I'm honest. You know, we might have, if you're going to focus on a fire thing, I can maybe see a couple of things. It's excessive fire loading, I get that. There's loads and loads of non-flame retardant flags on the ground at the end of the day, but there's no smoking in grounds, and I do genuinely think that rule works. I've not seen smoking in rugby grounds for a long time, so I think that works. The grounds are built differently now. I've never been to Bath Rugby Ground, so I don't know what it's like, but if I remember rightly, it's quite metal based, so it's not like it's a, you know, Bradford Football Stadium scenario here. So, you know, we're not talking about quick fire spread. Maybe they're difficult to evacuate. Yeah, but there's guidance around event management. There's guidance around doing this stuff. You know, HSE even published in their Mythbusters that there is no ban on flags and bunting for sporting events. So we've addressed this years before. So it's really difficult to kind of work out there, you know, and it's the same for, now maybe not the same for the lorry driver scenario, because there is a bit of a clear risk there. There is a clear hazard. I do get that. But I do think we're increasing the risk to other users and the negative attitude. So let's just imagine that lorry driver probably doesn't work for the company that's receiving the load. They may or may not, but let's assume they don't. So So it can be understandable that they're focusing on their employees. But let's just think about the other impact that we've got on the wider industry then. So we've pretty much annoyed, quite rightly annoyed this lorry driver because he can't sleep and then he's forced to drive a bit more. Yes, there's some of you out there saying, well, he can pull over and go for a sleep elsewhere. Yeah, I get that, but the guy's sitting around doing nothing. Why can't he sleep at the same time? It makes sense. It's just understand. It's just so common sense, you know. He's standing around waiting. Why can't he sleep at the same time? It does make sense for him to do that. So that's not implementing these other controls. Maybe not these two fancy kind of expensive things like salvo locks, but maybe there are other ways to do it. I've heard of people just welding hooks onto the top of the metal door that kind of slides up to open the cab. So the key, and you put the keys on the hook, so they're at the top, they're completely out of reach. You know, I know there's a shunt button in lorries, and there may be some needed control around that, but is the likelihood of somebody purposely using that pretty low? I'd say really low. The likelihood of somebody accidentally using that whilst it's in use, a little bit higher maybe. I don't know. But let's just think about what this does then. So we peed this guy off for health and safety reasons. So we said, no, I can't do that, mate, health and safety. Yeah, what kind of sleep in my cab? Oh, health and safety. Right, okay. So he doesn't sleep in his cab. We peed him off. Then he's wound up for the whole day around health and safety. Then he's got just a negative attitude towards health and safety. That becomes infectious. He moans about health and safety to his kids. His kids then go to school and they moan about health and safety. So they don't listen about the safety rules on a school trip. And then their mate does. And then they grow up and then their kids does. And this just becomes a perpetuant cycle of a negative attitude towards health and safety. So when I say health and safety professionals, you're the problem. That's what I'm talking about. We're breeding this thing we're trying to fight. Yeah, so let's just think back to that scenario from Simon Sinek that we used at the beginning. You know, let's take a step back and wash our hands, yeah? So, a couple of things to conclude then. A couple of things to ask yourself. You know, I really want you to ask yourself, if you're implementing a risk assessment or control measures, is this over the top? And truly think about that. Take accountability for the negative attitude that you may produce by going over the top. Yeah, because if you're in a business, you're going to develop that culture of negativity by going over the top. So you're only making it harder for yourself. So be honest with yourself, guys, when you're asking these questions. If the business is saying it's health and safety and it's actually not, so you're the safety guy and you're sitting there being like, I never said that. Stand up for yourself. I know that's difficult, and I know that's easy for me to say because I don't work for that I haven't come across that yet. But believe me, you'll be better off by standing up to yourself for yourself and for the industry. You'll feel better, and you know what? If somebody's doing that and you haven't been involved, and you're the so-called safety professional, you don't want to work there because they'll come looking for you when something goes wrong. They'll be going, "Oh, James said," you know. So maybe you don't want to be working there. And finally, just provide some context to what you're implementing or what you're stopping or prohibiting or whatever. You know, just stop saying, "Nah, I can't do that, health and safety, mate. Nah, I can't do that, health and safety, mate." You know, you sound like a bouncer on a night out. Can't come in here, got fancy dress. Yeah, but I haven't caused any trouble, don't care. You know, you might cause trouble because you're in fancy dress. You know, it's that kind of scenario. Think about when you were 18 or you are 18 or you're young or you're old, doesn't matter. But when you were out on a night out, you've not caused any trouble. You're not that kind of person that would cause trouble anyway, and they don't let you in. It's so frustrating. And that's the same thing when somebody takes a flag into a rugby ground and they're told they can't do it, and they go, "Sorry, mate, health and safety." Yeah, but what health and safety? Just health and safety. Failed the test, mate. What test? Oh, three of them, and fire as well. Yeah, they catch on fire. You know what I mean? Health and safety, and it's gone mad. We joke about it so easily. I've got an advent calendar sitting in front of me that's got health and safety approved on it. We joke about it, and that's good. I like the bit of humour that we get around it. But we're encouraging that negative attitude, so let's just take a step back and really think about ourselves. So, in essence, guys, as much as we change the content from risk assessments, we are still talking about risk assessments. We're just giving you examples of really crap ones. So they're just things I want you to think about, yeah? And I'm not really taught you anything today, maybe, but I'm just giving you a couple of questions, a couple of things to sit back and think about. And if you know the reason why Bath Rugby didn't let those flags in. Please, please let me know. I have tweeted Bath for a bit of a response. And do you know what? Just to be cheeky, I might tweet them this this podcast as well. It's absolutely crazy and I really can't think of any reasons why. If you're a lorry driver and you're annoyed by the same thing James is, or you're a safety professional in that industry and you're really annoyed about what I'm saying, let me know, please. Let us know what you've done and why you've done it and how you've done it. If you've got some crazy ideas and how you've sorted this problem, let us know so that James can take them out elsewhere and let his employers know. So that's it, guys. That's it for this week's episode. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to find us on Facebook and Twitter. Let us know if there's anything you want to hear from us. And finally, it'd be really interesting if you could just let us know what platform you're using, guys. So if you listen to this podcast, I'd really, really, really love to find out how you're listening. So yeah, find us on Facebook and Twitter at @riskfluent or /riskfluent for Facebook. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Look forward to hearing from you next week when we talk about risk assessments. See you later.